All right, we are back here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650, live from the backup Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. We were whisked away during the commercial break by our fearless leader, Cam Barra. The backup studio, ready to go. We can hear each other in our headphones. We can hear what's going on the station. Truly incredible, incredible work here, Drance. It's very exciting. We're up. We're going. We're doing it.
Lots of Willy Wonka jokes over the course of our break. Look, sometimes you've got to make do.
That's right.
Roll with the punches, as it were. You know, we're a resilient show. We take it one show at a time and give 110%.
That's right.
And, you know, sometimes it's not always going to be perfect. It's not always going to be a Picasso. But we get the fundamentals down. And
sometimes you got to burn the tape.
Yeah.
On that first segment.
See,
just forget about it. Get on to the next thing.
See, when you say something like we're a resilient show because we had like 20 minutes of technical difficulties, doesn't it make it plain how silly it is for like professional athletes to be, we're resilient. We came back from like a loss, which will happen 30 times in a year to the best teams in this league. The idea of resilience in sports is, I wish I could crusade against it. We need to stop it.
Resilience, momentum is another one up there that's just like this floating buzzword that can mean anything at any different time. You know what I mean?
At least momentum, we know it when we see it.
That's true, but it's always like retroactively applied.
Right.
Because you're like, something will happen, like, oh, this is going to turn momentum, and then it doesn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then if it did, it's like you look back at that thing as the turning point in the whole game or series, but there's no way to actually predict what it's going to be.
For sure. But at least we know momentum when we see it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Whereas resilience, I feel like people just throw it around now. You know, like, do you want to know the most resilient man in sports?
Do I ever?
Lance Armstrong. Lance Armstrong got testicular cancer, mastered anabolic steroids for the treatment of cancer, and then applied his knowledge to dominating the sport. Like, that's resilience, baby.
That's why he got all those bracelets made for him. Pure resilience.
That's resilience.
Are you sure
we want to celebrate it? You still sure?
Just an incredible take. The Mount Rushmore of resilience. Lance Armstrong, Barry Bonds.
No, Barry Bonds is different.
No, Barry Bonds saw McGuire and Sosa lap him and get all the credit. He said, I'm going to put an end to this. I'm going to show them.
That's not resilience.
All right. Back on the rails here. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. And look, Drance, you might have noticed a lot of chatter out there about one player specifically on the Vancouver Canucks, of course, Elias Pettersson. Josh from Kamloops texts in, why is the whole 650 station so reluctant to throw any criticism Pettersson's way? It's like pulling teeth. You all act as though he's the best thing since sliced bread. Now, first of all, I would say not everyone. I know Jason Brough has been, I think, very vocally critical of Elias Pettersson's play, so it's not exactly unanimous at the station. And here's the thing I'll say.
Also, there's only one player we treat as being the best thing since sliced bread.
Pugh Suter.
And I was going to say Quinn Hughes, but sure.
And here's what I'll say. I have been critical of Elias Pettersson. Elias Pettersson, I think, needs to be better. I think it's fair to say Elias Pettersson has not been at his best, has not been at the elite level that Elias Pettersson can be when he's at his best. We've all seen that. We all know what it looks like, and it doesn't look like the last 6 weeks or whatever you want to put it at, 2 months. But there's a big difference between criticizing Elias Pettersson and pretending like he's this team's biggest problem, pretending like he is the reason this team is scuffling down the stretch. So I am more than willing to stand here and say he needs to do better. He needs to do more. He needs to have more game-breaking moments. You know, he needs to be a part of the solution on the power play, which is really struggling. That's all 100% true. And I've been willing to say that. I have said that. I'll keep saying that if this is where his game continues to be. Just where I run into the issues is when people want you to make the leap from that, from the very justified, totally reasonable criticism of how Elias Pettersson is playing, to go from there to he's not worth the contract, they should trade him, he's a bum, they're never going to win anything, yada, 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 he's invisible, he doesn't work hard enough, all of that. Because all of that, I think, is frankly pretty ridiculous. to be perfectly honest. And I was looking at the numbers, and I put it out on Twitter. Since March 1st, right, when he's supposedly, like, disappeared and been invisible, and you can't even notice him out there. Oh, is he even playing? He's costing the team games. Canucks are winning his minutes 10-5. 2-1. Outscoring teams 2-1 by a 2-1 margin, doubling them up in his minutes 5-on-5 since March 1st. You look at any metric for controlling play. Shot attempts, shots, scoring chances, expected goals. He's top three for forwards on the team.
Well, and the other guys play with him.
Well, Connor Garland sometimes has.
Yes.
But Connor Garland's also just incredible. And then Nils Höglander is his frequent line mate.
But a lot of it has been boosted by that three games that line spent dominating.
Yeah. So, again, that's not to, like, quote-unquote, I'm not throwing those, people are like, oh, you're defending him or you're excusing him. I'm not throwing it out there to excuse Elias Pettersson. Again, the baseline I'm beginning from here is, I think he can be better, and if the Canucks are going to go a long way in the playoffs, I think he needs to be better. It's not an excuse, it's not a defense, it's just context. And I think it's context to explain why, at least for myself, and I think I could probably throw our whole show in here, you know, not to speak for you, Durant, it's context for why we don't spend more time focusing on Elias Pettersson and where his game is at right now, because his game in many ways is still at a very, very high level. And in fact, I would actually go even a step further. I was thinking about this today when I was digging into the numbers, right? There's this whole idea like, oh, he's proving that he's not worth the contract. He's proving that he's not worth $11.6 million. If this is the low ebb of a player, right? Like, if this is like, oh, he's so off, nothing good is happening when he's out there, he really needs to find his game, and you're still outscoring the other team 2-1 when he's on the ice, and he's still controlling play at a really, really high level, like, this is the worst version, then I'm even more excited about paying him $11.6 million. It's like, that's a sign that he's a really, really good player if this is what it looks like when he's completely off his game. And the other thing I'll say is, again, okay, it's perfectly fine to be like, man, it's just not the same old Petey. There's not that dynamic offensive playmaking, game-breaking ability that we've seen. Again, I agree that's fair, but I just keep going back to every time there's been any sort of stretch like this in his NHL career, we've had similar conversations, and what's happened? Elias Pettersson has made the people doubting him, the people questioning him, the people saying he's not going to be a superstar, he's made them look foolish. And again, I have no doubt whatsoever that he's going to do that again. So yeah, criticize Pettersson all you want, but just keep it to what he's doing, put it in context, and like, don't make claims that you're going to regret in very short order about Elias Pettersson.
I also thought he was pretty good last night.
He was.
I thought that line was by far Vancouver's best, 5-on-5. Like, not close. There were a ton of other players who had quieter games. Here's what really drives it home, right? So since the All-Star break, 26-game sample here, we'd all agree, if I said on the radio, JT Miller has gone up a level, has been at the best level that we've seen him mm-hmm. as a Canuck, how many people do you think would disagree with me?
Like, not a lot.
Like one guy at the back? Like, no.
Yep.
5-on-5 points in that time frame. JT Miller, 14. Nils Höglander is actually tied with him.
There you go.
14, Pettersson's line mate. Garland, 13. Pettersson, 13. It's a one-point difference.
Yeah.
At even strength. You know, like, if you go look at the 5-on-5 numbers, the only really big gap between the two is save percentage. Well, last time I looked, neither guy plays goalie. So, I don't know. Every way I try and slice it, I don't even see a player struggling. I just don't see a player picking their teeth with everybody the way he did last season while playing with Mikheyev and Kuzmenko. Like, I think more than anything, it's a credit to just how dominant Pettersson was last year.
It's a credit to how high his highs are.
Right, but his highs were sustained throughout last season. Mm-hmm. I mean, he dragged Mikheyev, Kuzmenko, and then they, like, replaced Mikheyev with Beauvillier. And it was like that line was just taking over games, even as the team completely failed to play defense around him. Like, it was a totally different level that he sort of hit. And that's kind of this ceiling where it's like, wow, when he plays like that, he might be a top five guy. If he played like that consistently, he'd for sure be a top five guy. And these sort of stretches, it's like, oh, well, maybe he's a top 20 guy. And the truth is probably somewhere in between, where it's like, okay, maybe he's a fringe top 10 guy.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's an unbelievable player.
Really good.
You know the thing about top 10 players? There's only 32 teams. And if you have two guys who you think might be that, right, who or at least who can be that at the same time, well, then you've got a chance to do what the Canucks did, wrecking this league for 4 months at the start of the season. I just don't understand. I think I fundamentally just don't understand it. I this is one where what I'm watching is a player who's not dominating games but is not playing poorly.
Mm.
And I think there's an amplification of criticism around him, in part because we know what the highs look like, and in part because he's got a teammate in Miller with a louder skill set,
yeah,
who for years we've sort of cast these two in opposition to one another, and I think that's impacted the conversation. So, you know, think of it as like a retro fitting of the old Bure versus Linden debate.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So it was like, in Linden, you had this guy who, like, would put people through the glass.
Yep.
You know, was
the emotional leader of the team.
Was North American.
Yep.
Right? The emotional engine of the team. And on the other hand, you had this sort of enigmatic, mysterious, mercurial goal scorer. And fans kind of picked sides. And you know, those two didn't particularly get along. In fact, I'm not saying that about Miller and Pettersson. I'm saying about Linden and Bure. They weren't buddies. But they obviously had a ton of team success together. And yet, you know, even though Bure was like a higher caliber of player, in a lot of ways, a lot of fans anyway, emotionally connected better and related better.
I mean, look at how Trevor Linden is still viewed, even after a stint in the front office that didn't end well.
I think that has also to do with his, like, personal and political skills and just,
sure,
like, retail politics.
But that's why fans connected with him as a player, too, right?
100%.
Like that's part of why he's had that successful post-playing career, too.
100%. And I think throughout his tenure, right, like, Canucks fans would talk about Trevor Linden in a way that fans from other markets would be like, huh?
Yeah.
And I think we're beginning to see some of that with Miller, right? Where, like, you know, fans are insisting stuff like, you know, this is the best 3-year run a Canuck has had. Like, he's going to outscore Bure and Henrik Sedin, and, you know, and it's like, yeah, but if you put it into context, like, he's been great. He's an awesome player, right? Top line guy. He's better right now than Trevor Linden was any season other than those first three, right? But, you know, I think the fact is that there's a tendency, because Miller fits these boxes, you know, that we like to see, that fans like to see, the size, the emotion, the physicality, the hits, the fact that he scored so many big goals over the course of the past 26 games. You know, and then in Pettersson, you've got a guy who does it a little bit differently, right? He's quieter. He's not as emotional. He falls down sometimes. He's, you know, he's not as, like, well-spoken in the media as Miller is. He's not as comfortable in that environment as Miller is. Like, Miller is a straight talker. He's one of the best quotes this team's had in years. So it's just a different dynamic. And I think, honestly, I think that's what's causing people to, like, severely underrate Pettersson and kind of, like, at Miller's expense. It's not fair to either of these two guys. It's just how it feels. It feels like a market that's almost had this debate before, settling into, like, the familiar rhythms of it.
Yeah. Well, I think there's definitely something to the idea that players with a certain profile, both on and off the ice, are just going to click in this market more than others, right? And I think that's a good analogy to, you know, JT Miller and Trevor Linden and a lot of those same characteristics. I think just in terms of the timing of this round of debate around Elias Pettersson, there's a few things going on. And one person texted unsigned, his new contract amplifies expectations. And I think you just look at all of the consternation and debate before he signed the contract, then he signs the contract. The period of time right after he signs the new deal coincides with the team struggling, really, for the first time all season, and him admittedly not being at his best. So there's just that sort of confluence of events which ends up getting a lot of focus on him. And I think the other thing is, you know, the power play has dried up, right? And so when all of a sudden the power play dries up, like, because his point production has been so strong this year in general until this last little stretch where she's still scoring, but it's dipped from the rate it was earlier in the year. And part of that is 5-on-5, but a huge part of that is the power play. So you can't even look at it and say, oh, you know, he's not having these game-breaking moments, but lo and behold, he's still up above a point per game over this stretch. So I think it's just been kind of a perfect storm of things with it, which has ended up with him in the crosshairs. But again, you know, I have no problem whatsoever with fans demanding more, wanting to see more. You know, he has to be one of this team's best players. He is capable of breaking games open. We've seen that. It's just I can't get on board. And more than that, I struggle to fully understand it when it becomes, oh, we're never going to win with him, right? Oh, he's invisible. He's not working hard. He's taking games
off.
That's
wild.
That's the conversation, which I think is just completely detached from reality. He's a star player, not at the top of his game right now, but who is still helping the team have results, who is still helping the team win his minutes when he's out there on the ice. And yeah, like, I think the other thing with this is, you know, how often have we heard he's being paid like McDavid and McKinnon now, so, you know, look how dominant those guys are on the ice. And I think there's a similar thing happening with that comparison to the JT Miller comparison, where those guys are just so noticeable, right? They're fast. They're incredibly dynamic on the puck, off the rush. That's not Pedersen's game. It's similar to the Sedins. That wasn't the Sedins' game, right? And there's just this kind of bias to, like, the NHL version of hero ball. You know what I mean? Like, the end-to-end rush, the incredible play off the rush. Like, that's what we think of when we think of a star player. That's not going to be Pedersen's game. He's going to do it in more subtle ways. And I think it can be harder to pick up on a lot of the little things that he's doing really, really well to help the team drive play when the points aren't going in at the same rate.
So I've got a lot of thoughts on this, but, you know, one of them is, you know, McDavid plays with Dreisaitl a lot, plays with Zach Hyman and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And, you know, I can't get over when you list Pedersen's line mates above 150 minutes this season, you get Kuzmenko, you get Mikheyev, you get Besser, you get Hoglander, and you get Sam Lafferty. Like, that's the list of five forwards that he spent at least 150 minutes with. Pretty big difference between that and, like, Mikko Rantanen and Valeri Nichushkin and, you know, now Jonathan Drouin would qualify. But you know, I do think there's a difference in environment as well, which is not to say that I think Pedersen's as good as McKinnon and McDavid. Here's the other thing that I think we underestimate. Like, McDavid's the best hockey-playing human on the planet, and I think we underestimate the gulf between him and the next tier
down. Nathan McKinnon.
Yeah. And then I think we vastly underestimate the tier between Nathan McKinnon and that sort of group of guys you want to put, you know, 3-6. Kucherov, Dreisaitl, Matthews, whatever.
Yeah. Pasternak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think that gap is massive. I was in Denver, and I watched McKinnon just destroy, pick his teeth with the Predators. I mean, he's ludicrous. He's so good. And I think, you know, I think Pedersen can get into that tier beneath McKinnon, and that's going to be worth $12 million all day long. Like, this contract, especially with upcoming cap growth, is going to be a massive steal. A massive steal. And you're right. The fact that this is probably the floor performance from Pedersen, and he's still providing real value, like, still some of the best underlying performance on the team, best point production on the team, 5-on-5, like, to me, that's a case for why this deal, you know, shouldn't be a millstone, like a critical millstone around his neck, but instead should be, you know, something that we look at as, like, not just necessary, but a huge slam dunk win for this hockey team, a move you make 10 times out of 10.
And that's the biggest thing for me, is just separating, like, the here and now, does he need to be better for the team to go far in the playoffs? 100% unequivocally yes, versus there's, like, a long-term structural thing wrong with his contract or his play or his game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the dividing line for me, where it goes from being totally reasonable and fair and something we should be talking about. He's one of the best players on the team. He's, of course, subject to criticism. That's the dividing line between makes sense and why are we doing this? What are we talking about here?
I think we've covered this. Can I just drop a bomb and walk away?
Please do.
Like, I'll drop a bomb and we'll go to break. Because one thing we haven't talked about as the power play has sputtered, and, you know, overall on the season, Jamie, it's still like it was 22.7% last year. It's like 22.5% this year. It's not like it's overall fallen off a cliff, but we know how frustrating it's been to watch over the last 2-3 months. Here's the conversation no Canucks fan wants to have about the power play struggles. Just going to leave this here. New York Islanders last season, 15.8% on the power play. New York Islanders this season, 20.3% on the power play.
Oh, boy.
What changed? Was there something that changed?
Oh, boy.
It seems like there was maybe only one big thing that changed.
It's true. You're not wrong. Power play needs to be better.
Yeah.
We'll think about what that thing that changed in New York might have been.
Yeah, maybe,
we'll brainstorm it a little bit.
Maybe a guy no one wants to admit is having a far better season.
All right, we will take a break. Jason Bukala, our guy, joins us next here. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650. 50 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Do we have Books on the line, guys? Not yet. Jason Bukala will join us momentarily here on Canucks Talk. Big Landon DuPont feature dropping from Books on Sportsnet, so I'm excited to to chat with him on that.
I'm going up to the Okanagan this weekend to do some stuff. And work stuff, by the way.
I was going to say cryptically said... I'm just going to do some stuff up there. No biggie. No biggie.
Well, it'll depend a little bit on which WHL games, require, like, if necessary, game sixes. But, looking forward to it. Was chatting to some people up there in advance about Landon DuPont. And the way they talk about, there's this one prep, one of the big academies has the two players. So this year, who went 1-2 in the WHL Bantam draft, okay. Both guys, same team.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, insanely loaded. DuPont would be a year behind them.
Yeah.
Right? And those two teams met in the finals, and DuPont just, like, destroyed it. This guy's getting talked about, like, in a totally different way. Like the way Bedard was, but as a defense.
We'll touch on that and a whole lot else. It is now Jason Bukala joining us from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL scout. Jason, always a pleasure to have you on the show. We were just getting a little Landon DuPont chatter in before you joined us. And as I was saying, you have the big scouting report up on DuPont at sportsnet.ca right now. And, of course, this comes on the heels of the news reported by Elliot Friedman that he's going to be given exceptional status. First defenseman to get it in the WHL. Previously, only Connor Bedard had it in the WHL. So a big deal. What were your impressions kind of digging into Landon DuPont's game and compiling that scouting report?
Wow. Star in the making. I got to tell you guys, and I'm not overhyping this kid at 14 years old, what he's been able to do playing for that edge school there in Calgary, which is a very elite program, by the way. Like they really create a lot of prospects coming out of that program. He on the back end, he's got some hues in him. And when he rushes the puck off the rush, he's got this toe drag that he'll snipe under the bar that reminds me a little bit of Connor Bedard off the rush. Like it's been extremely impressive. And I'm going to tell you something else. He's at 5'11", 170 at 14. Like when years ago in Florida, when we drafted Ekblad first overall and he got exceptional status into the Ontario Hockey League out of Sun County, which is the Windsor area of Ontario, to play for the Barrie Colts, he was already a man child. I mean, this guy was, 6'3" already when he came to the league and he just had to fill out his body. So DuPont's different at 5'11". He's a transitional defenseman with really creative, but I'll tell you can't sleep on him on the physicality side of his either. I broke down religiously I was looking for something that I could say, I don't know if that translates for next year. He might have a problem, until he started blowing up some guys physically on top of everything else, and I was really impressed.
You know, you mentioned the Aaron Ekblad, of course, one of the defenders in the OHL who had exceptional status as a 14-year-old or as a 15-year-old going in to the OHL. How different is it for a defenseman, or how challenging might it be for Landon DuPont, especially, as you said, without having that kind of incredible size that Ekblad had at his age, to make that transition as a defenseman to the WHL?
I think it's much more difficult at every level for a defenseman to transition to higher levels. So I think that even if you come out of an academy, or even if you're going through minor hockey circles and you play up an age group and you're a defenseman, I feel like there's so much more responsibility. You're so much more involved in the play in certainly the top two zones, but obviously even in the neutral zone, you know, defending against regroups or, you know, having to rush to gain the line to get it deep under duress. You're always involved. There's always something going on with, you know, at the defense position. So, you know, it's like that when they get to the National Hockey League too. I think it takes them, you know, a couple hundred games before you really know what they, you know, what they're capable of being at the highest level. So it's going to be no different for DuPont when he gets to the WHL. But, you know, his spatial awareness and the way he manages the game from east to west, like from, you know, utilizing the entire width of the rink, and it's like he's got ice in his veins. It's hard to put into words. In the article that I wrote for .ca, I tried to clip as many clips as I could to fit into a story to try and do the kid justice and give people a look, you know, like at all these different things that I'm seeing. And he'll have a hard time, but his hockey sense is so elite that it's going to be quicker than most.
Books, I'm going to head up to Kelowna this weekend, and I need one more Wenatchee win in the next two so that game six is necessary on the Sunday and I can watch Tiija Ginla. What's your scouting report on the son of Jerome, who's lighting it up for the Kelowna Rocket?
I love Tiij. First of all, let's start off the ice. We sat down with him at the prospects game, had a really nice conversation with the kid. Pretty much what you could expect, mature, like off the charts mature. Doesn't wear the Ginla name in terms of being a badge to elevate my status. What he does is he makes it very clear, you know, I want to be my own person, my own player. I'm different than my dad. And he's very proud of the fact that he potted 47 tucks. And, you know, even Jerome didn't do that in his draft year. So what I like about this guy is compact frame, real good brain. When he moves pucks, when somebody gaps up in the neutral zone or even on the half wall, he's the type of player who doesn't, like, pucks don't die on his stick. So he moves pucks to space where somebody else can pounce and continue on with the play. And sometimes he'll chip it kind of laterally where it might be a one-on-one battle. It's like a really good crafty little play, so his teammate has a one-on-one battle instead of just extending it down the same side of the ice where it's already a two-on-two, if you get my drift, or, you know, a two-on-one against. So he's really smart that way. Rips pucks, equal parts shooter, you know, distributor, but I would lean that he's a shooter on the horizon more as an NHL player. I'm biased because I'm going to Finland in a couple weeks. So I'm hoping he gets knocked out of playoffs and I get to go watch him play for Team Canada and Finland in a couple weeks, which would be great.
Me and you, Books, both rooting for Wenatchee in game four because we want to see more of Ginla. Okay, so let's transition just a little bit and talk about the Canucks. Bit of a fade stretch for a club that's, you know, been so good and so consistent all year long. What do you make of the fact that Vancouver has dropped, you know, their last four? Let's keep the sample incredibly tiny. So in their last four games, the Canucks have lost to the Kings, lost to the Dallas Stars, and required, you know, a last minute goal to defeat the Anaheim Ducks. Are you worried at all, or is this just the sorts of doldrums that you kind of expect at this point in the year?
No, so I'm glad I hope we got a few minutes so I can get a few things off my chest here, because I'm prepping for the Canucks, you know, getting ready for playoffs here, and I'm looking at it from a scout's eye, you know, like what to expect if I'm an opponent and where can I expose them. I've been on the Canucks train from day one this year. Everything they touch turned to gold. I really like the year they've had on balance, but let's condense it the way you guys are asking me to do that. So in the last five games, you know, JT Miller still stands out for me, you know, 6 points. He's like a dash one, but he's still around it, you know, 15 hits, 63% in the faceoffs, guys. Let's not underestimate that. That's really important come playoff time. Garland's been a bulldog. I never thought a year and a half ago I would be as fond of his game as I am today. I think that he's been a bulldog. Besser's just been okay. He's got 4 points in the last five games, but he's dashed three, and I haven't felt like he's been around it enough. Holander's been himself. Hughes has been himself. Roenick seems to have struggled with, you know, the not playing with Hughes as much and to get his offense going. Having said that, he's still a plus player, logging a ton of minutes. Cole looked like, I don't know what happened to Cole last night and recently, but he's looked like he's hit the wall a little bit physically here. His pace and his execution is not what I, you know, need it to be. But Pettersson, guys, has not been close to good enough. And I think the coach said it coming out of the game last night. I watched that game from start to finish. I mean, I went through a range of emotions. I actually thought they were going to come back in the second period for a little bit there. Like, I felt like they were carrying it, but they were teasing us, weren't they? Really, on balance. They lost the game early.
Too many point shots, didn't you think?
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing inside.
Nothing between the dots. And Pettersson, he's got 9 shots on goal in his last 5 games. Like, just let that resonate for a second. That we need our best player at the hardest time of year to have the puck on his stick and, you know, ripping it from the flank even 3 times on a power play sequence, never mind 9 shots in 5 games. So I think the coach said that he's got to, you know, these guys got to take a long, hard look in the mirror and kind of, you know, self-evaluate, if you will. And I'm 100% on board with that. That's exactly what's required. The other thing that we have to make note of here for me is, like, I like the Smith as a backup, and I don't think that he was awful last night by any stretch. Like, you know, some of the things that went wrong in front of him, like, honestly, could you really blame the goaltender? Not a chance. So
no.
Not a chance. And he actually made a couple of huge saves, but, you know, Demko definitely gives him a different look on the back end. Like, it occurs to me the more I watch the Smith, and he's fine, so I'm not knocking him down at all, but I'm just talking as an opponent when I look in between the pipes. The longer I look at the Smith, I see a much smaller goalie who's, like, you know, who's quick. Like, he made a couple of blocks. He made a blocker save in the second period. It was ridiculous. Really great blocker save, like, from the deep slot. And that, hey, before I forget, let's not, how many times did the Canucks give up chances between the hash marks last night? I'm not even talking, like, off the rush or, you know, obviously on the penalty kill, but, you know, we need more digging. It better happen tonight. Like, I don't care that it's back-to-back. I need Pettersson to go off tonight. I need him to be – I don't even care if he scores a goal. I need him to have the puck. I need him to have it more often. I need him to get better looks and selfishly rip as many pucks on goal as he possibly can.
You know, because I wanted to talk about Pettersson with you. We were talking about him in the last segment, and, you know, the conversation around Pettersson out here I think has gotten a little off the rails because – one, I think you're 100% right that they need more from him. I also look at it, though, and think, you know, they're still consistently winning his minutes when he's out there. And if I look at the scoring problems overall for the team, I think there's other places I would point the finger. But on Pettersson, because you're right, like, we all know what Pettersson looks like at the top of his game and what he's capable of doing when he's completely on it, when he's playing at his best. And there's been a ton of debate here, you know, is he not moving his feet enough? Is it confidence? Is he dealing with an injury of some sort? Like, is it will? What is it? Do you see one specific thing that stands out when you're watching Elias Pettersson right now?
The only thing that I could say to this, and last week I had an interesting conversation with Luke Gazdick when we were, like, in studio sports, and we were talking about the Canucks. In recent weeks, we've kind of it's been a little bit of a melting pot, hasn't it? Like, we've kind of switched up some lines and we've tried different things in the power play. And we had some guys injured and then coming back and, you know, different things like that. For me, on balance, that's the only thing that I can figure out, that he's kind of lost his groove a little bit, or the continuity that certainly that they had when, you know, Miller, Besser and Pettersson were playing together in February, where it looked like Pettersson might end up with 120 points the way they were scoring back then, you know, and that's the only thing I can say. The one thing I will say about him is, like, he's a plus two, you know, he's 55% in the faceoff. This isn't horrible, but he is a guy that we need to produce offense in playoffs. There's absolutely no question about it. So he's always going to be one of those players, and I think it's the Swede in him, to be perfectly fair. And you know, he's got that type of body language that you're always going to, like, when things are going exceptionally well, you're not going to notice it. But when things aren't going as well, you're going to think he's a little laissez-faire. But I'm not concerned about that part. I think it's the compete that I need to go to a little bit different level, more selfishness, more jump to small spaces, harder to defend. I think that's my biggest takeaway. I need him to be harder to defend, and he's just got to look inward. It's obviously there. We know that. I'm not going to kill the guy, but you know, at the same token, I have high expectations right now, fellas, and I think that's fair. I think the fan base should have that. I think you guys should have that. I think I should have that, because we've been lobbing softballs for the majority of the year, right? So, and they've earned it because they've been so good. But now it's time. Hey, listen, we're noticing some things. Let's make sure we're ready to go here in a couple of weeks, because I don't want these guys to have their golf clubs out at the beginning of May. I want these guys to win a couple of rounds.
Well, and you know, Rick Tocchet has echoed a lot of what you were just saying there about, okay, this is the time to bring your game up a level. You know, some guys need to kind of look inward, look in the mirror, and find that extra gear. Now, he hasn't singled out Pettersson really, but you know, it's not difficult to read between the lines on what Rick Tocchet has said there. And just, you know, this time of year, how difficult is it for players? Because on the one hand, you know, these are regular season games. Yeah, they're trying to win their division, but they've already clinched the playoffs, so there's not a ton of stakes. But you're also trying to raise your game for the playoffs. How difficult is it to kind of thread that needle where you want to get there, you want to be healthy, but you also want to start that ramp-up process right now?
In my estimation, it shouldn't be difficult at all. And I mean, I'm not the guy putting on the boots, but
sure,
when we've gone through what we've gone through the last couple of years, and we worked so hard to put ourselves in a position that we're in right now, why would I ever want to take my foot off the gas in the stretch drive of the regular season? I want to be the best version of myself come puck drop in a couple of weeks. I mean, you have to go no further. Love him or hate him, I don't care. You don't have to go any further than John Tortorella to listen to his press conferences, which are entertaining in themselves, but he does bring up a good point, doesn't he? That here we are at the hardest time of year, and I'm finding things out about my team. They've worked so hard to put themselves in a position to be a playoff team, but they're also learning that what it takes down the stretch. So I think they are going through a little bit of that. Some of these players in the Canucks, their core, but you know, I guess the flip side of that could be like, are we going to start laying out? Like, Hughes is playing 25 minutes a night. He's a point of game still. He's still a plus player. He's not a perfect player on any given night, but is anybody walking out of the rink thinking that Hughes hasn't given everything that he's really had, you know, over the last stretch here? I'm not personally. Like, I'm fine. I'm satisfied. So it's a long answer, but I guess I'm programmed differently and I'm a little bit of a hard ass. Like, I expect these guys to be better prepared right now, because you can't just turn it off and on come playoffs. And that's obvious. We're going to play Vegas. We're going to play LA. Vegas looks like they're going to play a little bit off the rush, and you know, they work the wall exceptionally well, guys. They extend plays. They're hard to play against. LA is going to be that sleeper story if they ever got to LA. And they're gonna clog them up. And the Canucks have had a hell of a time against LA, you know, penetrating that 1-3-1. So lots to talk about here, but compete, relentless compete at this time of year. You can't go without it.
Books, is Pettersson at the point, like, you want to see more, but is Pettersson at the point where you're actually worried in any way about him? Or is this just a wake-up call? You gotta be better. You got to be the game-breaker for this team.
Wake up call, part of the process. We're going to reconvene in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, hopefully longer than that. You know, and we'll make a decision then on balance, you know, of how he's reacted over this period of time. But right now, just he's got it in him. He's definitely capable of doing it. But he needs a kick, and you know, we all need a kick once in a while, and there's nothing the matter with that.
Big picture, right? Because I think where the conversation in this market's trending toward, right, is not, like, we all think Pettersson can be better than he's been. I think where I struggle with the conversation is I still think he's been at a really high level. It's just that he's not been at the level he can be at. And I feel like we get to this moment where there's a gap between saying, hey, this guy can play better and he needs to, and the way this guy is playing shows that the contract that the Canucks signed him to isn't worth it. Like, there's a lot of space there. Where do you come down within that space?
I think he's a star player in the National Hockey League. I think he's earned the extension. He's earned the contract. I know what he's capable of doing. And if you want to take teams deep in playoffs as part of the star core, the upper echelon of a group, and you want to go out deep on playoff runs, like, we don't have these conversations about other star players who've gone on deep runs. I mean, even Kucherov drives you crazy, right? You know, sometimes off the puck and, you know, you wish you had more out of him. But you know what? When the games get hard and all of a sudden they really need something, guess what he's doing? He's finding a way, right? He's always finding a way. And that's what I need out of him too. I'm not like, he's a star player, guys. This is the expectation when you get to this level. And, you know, the human side of it, yeah, I want to be fair to anybody. I really do, because I understand. Like, you know, you could be banged up a little bit. It's a long season. You're not the heaviest guy in the league. You know, it wears you down a little bit, all those types of things. But I don't think your coach looks at it that way. Your coach was a warrior. You know, Foote was a warrior. Foote was really a warrior. And, you know, these guys aren't looking at it that way. They're not giving them any space that way, because this is when your ultimate reputation as a player is earned in the hockey community. The hockey guys look down on people like this positively when they maintain or go to maybe even another level at this time of year. They don't regress. So I think he's going to be fine. I'm not jumping off, you know, the Pedersen train here. I think he's going to be fine. But listen, it's also fair for us to expect more at this time of year. And I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. That's where I'm at. I need him to be better.
What do you think about Vegas? How scared should the Western Conference be with the way they're rounding into form right now?
A week and a half ago, I wasn't scared about Vegas. I'm not going to lie. Like, I said to somebody, I said, geez, you know, like, because I am pulling for the Canucks. Like, truthfully, I have a bias here. I'm pulling for the Canucks. I love it when the Canucks are good in playoffs, because it's fun, right? So, but a week and a half ago, I'm thinking, after the LA game, I'm like, I really hope that Vancouver plays Vegas. I think they're going to be fine there. They're going to win the goaltending battle. They're going to do this, and this. And then I watched Vegas run off, I think 8-1-1 or at least 8-2-1 in their last 11 or something like that. And all of a sudden they're starting to look like they're a completely different outfit. Are we not hearing that the Hurdle's like, yep, he's about to come into the lineup, is he not? Like, so that's going to happen as well. So, yeah, they look like a team that's getting ramped up to play their best version of themselves right now. So, yeah, I'm concerned, but I'm not threatened. I'm not intimidated. I've earned my right to be where I am in the standing over a long period of time. I'm ready to learn how to elevate my game to another level too. The Canucks might not go to the Stanley Cup final this year, guys. They might not. And they got a whole bunch of decisions to make in the offseason. But we worked really hard to reestablish our franchise and our footing in this league as a really good team this year. So be confident in yourself as well.
Pooks, just want to quickly, I want to ask you two things. So let's go lightning round really fast. I'm going to throw a number at you and a name, and I want to get your reaction. Okay? $3.5 million per year, Dakota Joshua. What's your reaction?
I would pay him $3 million. If it took 3.5, I think he's that valuable to the franchise. It's not going to be about points. It's going to be about his role and what he does for the group. I really like Dakota Joshua. I thought that they missed him when he was out with injury.
Very, very little hesitation, I want to note. Okay, ready? Secretly, there is now a true favorite in the NHL, and it's the Colorado Avalanche since the trade deadline. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Agree. Yeah. Not secretly. Gorgiev has gone to another level. He's stopping pucks. He's waving. He's acrobatic, but he's on time right now. They get that kind of goaltending on top of everything. They're a handful.
Jason, great stuff as always, man. Really enjoyed the discussion today, and we will chat with you next week.
Awesome, guys. Thanks for letting me vent there for a few minutes. I feel much better.
No, that was fun. That was good. We appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Books.
All right, boys. See ya.
That is Jason Buglo from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and also a former NHL scout. And somebody texts in, Buglo's take on Pedersen is a lot closer to public sentiment. I think it's pretty similar to what I was trying to say, though. Like, again, he needs to be better, but it's not a long-term concern. Isn't that what Jason said? Now, Jason maybe was like a little...
I interrogated him on
more,
it because I wanted to make sure that what he was saying wasn't misconstrued by the people being like, push back on Books since you guys disagree, pom-pom set. So I made sure to be like, hey, look, do you see this as a long-term concern?
Yeah. And he doesn't. I think that's the dividing line. Is it a blip or is it a long-term concern?
If you want to say the Canucks aren't going to win the Stanley Cup without Pedersen playing better, you will have me agreeing
with
you.
That's 100% correct.
No doubt
about that.
If you are, however, saying something like the contract the Canucks signed Pedersen to, he's shown that he's not worth it over the last 26 games, you're out to lunch. So I think there should be a fair bit of space, critical space, between those two poles.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it comes down to, this team needs Pedersen to be at a really, really high level.
Yep.
And I think we've seen that over the last 26 games, right? It's no coincidence that it's coinciding. Their roughest stretch is coinciding with his roughest stretch of the season. So he needs to get there. I think I just have a lot more faith that he will and can get there than some other people in the market. All right, we'll take one more break. Final segment of the show coming up here. Get your text in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll play some comments from Rick Tocchet. Not a lengthy media session with Tocchet ahead of the Arizona game tonight, but we'll play that, look ahead to tonight's game a little bit as well. Lots more coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strands here. We are live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. We will get back into the inbox at some point here. Of course, the Canucks back-to-back games on the road. So a chance to immediately put that 6-3 loss against the Vegas Golden Knights behind them against the Arizona Coyotes tonight. Rick Tocchet coaching against his former team that he was head coach for tonight. And let's hear from Rick Tocchet speaking to the media before the game.
Rick, I wonder what you guys talked about in the meeting. How do you kind of regroup here?
Yeah, I think the details, I think, when things slip a little bit, you lose your details. You know, we talk about staples and our pillars around here, and anytime players, we have some guys that are struggling, and when you struggle, you got to get back to those things, like the energy and your compete level, your attitude, all those things help you get out when you're struggling, so you got to bring that every night. We weren't ready to play against Vegas, we didn't play through people, and we threw a lot of pucks, hope plays. We tried to get back in it, and then right after you score a goal, they would come back with a odd man rush. So it's not our style of hockey. We can't play that way, and I think the players know that. I'm pretty confident that they'll bounce back tonight.
Do you get the sense that these individuals, you challenged them last night, you kind of called them out to say there are some guys that need to step up. Do they get that, and do they come to you on a day like today and say, hey, how can I improve?
Yeah, I think really the message, I've talked to a couple of individuals, at the start of the game, just pick a couple of things in your game to improve on. Like, if you're going into a game, I've scored one goal in 30 games, and I'm struggling to get my shot off, and I'm right away you're thinking negative. I think if you go into a game, this is just my experience from telling players, is pick one thing. You know, if that's my man, I'm going to make sure I go through him. He's not going to get above me. If I get the puck down low, if somebody's open, give it to him. If not, hold on to the puck. Don't throw it blind. If you just do those two things early in your game, it's amazing how all that positive and good stuff come from that. But if you're looking at a negative, I'm struggling, and you start throwing hope plays, and I lose my man because I don't go through him, then you're going to struggle even more. So I think it's more of the trying to give them the game plan, the blueprint, but then them actually, you know, applying it to their game.
What is it that Arizona does that you need to be ready for?
Fast team. You know, they're a very fast team. They got some forwards that can really zip the puck around, you know, so we're going to have to make sure that we play a sticky game against them.
I love your advice to Shelaws the other day was to just go out and have fun. What's your advice here for the second game?
Yeah, I mean, he looks very confident in the net. I really enjoyed watching him play against Anaheim. He looked big. The stage wasn't too big. You know, he's playing a back-to-back game for a team that, you know, we didn't like our effort. So, you know, he's just got to go and, you know, he can't put the world on his shoulders. He's just got to go and do like he did against Anaheim and just be big and have fun.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet with some comments to the media ahead of tonight's game in Arizona. And, yeah, if the stage wasn't too big for Shelaws against the Ducks, definitely shouldn't be too big a stage at Mullet Arena tonight for Artur Shelaws, who will start in net for the Canucks. By the way, we weren't able to do the crossover as we normally do on a Wednesday earlier today due to technical difficulties, totally on us, not on Donnie and Dolly. But when we do the crossover, it's brought to you by Bessant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go. And I believe we're confirmed for the crossover tomorrow with Donnie and Dolly, so we'll still have a chance to chat with them this week. Although somebody texted in earlier, it would have been great to do it with our inability to hear what they were saying. It would have driven Dollywell absolutely nuts for you to be able to talk to him, but him not to be able to communicate back to you. I can see some upside there.
You know what? Me too. That's the dream conversation with my guy, Rick Dollywell.
Oh, dear. All right. So tonight.
Yeah, let's dwell on tonight.
Yeah.
Okay. So we covered this off a little bit in the whiteboard, right? As it stands today, or right now, the Canucks have a 61% shot of winning the division. The Oilers are at 39%. That's correct. Yes. Per Dom Lecision's model at The Athletic. Now, because Dom Lecision is a friend of Canucks fans everywhere.
Yes.
I reached out to him and I asked him, what happens tonight?
Give us the scenarios.
Give me the scenarios.
For how the odds change.
Now, there's a couple dynamics to understand. Like, Edmonton is an underdog tonight, where Dallas is heavily favored in that game this evening at the American Airlines Center. So that means that the model has effectively baked in an Oilers loss, much like it has baked in, to at least some extent,
yes,
a Canucks victory. Canucks are minus 150 to win, Dallas minus 125, right? So the model is assuming that Dallas is more, that Edmonton is more likely to drop points tonight than the Vancouver Canucks. As a result, any event where they take the same amount of points probably still favors Edmonton a little bit. And the opposite of that, the opposite logical conclusion of that is, if the Canucks lose tonight, a game that they should win, and Edmonton wins tonight, a game that they should lose, the model is going to react massively in Edmonton's favor, even though the Oilers, with a win tonight and a Canucks regulation loss, would still be 3 points back with two games in hand and a head-to-head matchup remaining.
One game in hand.
They currently have...
Well, but they'll still have a game in hand.
Right, okay. So
right,
one game in hand.
They both play tonight, but there'll be three games back with a game in hand.
Three games back with a game in hand. The model will move.
Oh, wait. I could be wrong about that because I'm looking at old standings. Hold on.
Let's pull up the NHL standings.
Let's pull up the NHL standings.
Make sure we know exactly what we're talking about. I thought it was two.
Yeah, I think you're right now that I say it.
No, yeah, it's two. They're going to still
you're
have two
right.
games. So three
Dang
games
it.
Back with two games in hand.
Yeah.
And a head-to-head, which means in some ways... You know, it's still in the Canucks' control because they have that game in hand, but also not really.
You could argue both teams control their destiny at that point.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah. So, here's the swing. If Edmonton wins and Vancouver loses tonight, we will wake up tomorrow and the model will suggest that the Oilers have a 63% shot at winning the Pacific Division. Canucks at 37%. If Vancouver wins and Edmonton loses... 78% for Vancouver, 22% Edmonton.
So this is a without two teams playing each other and still, you know, what, Edmonton would have 8 games left, the Canucks would have 6 games left. That's about as high stakes a night as you can find in terms of swinging a division, right? For a non-head-to-head matchup and not like the last day of the season or whatever.
To sort of break down the asymmetry as simply as possible, right? Vancouver win, Edmonton loss is plus 17 to the Canucks' probability of winning the division.
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver loses, Edmonton wins. That's a minus 24% swing against the Canucks. So that's a 41% leverage swing coming out of tonight should extreme results happen favorably or negatively in both games. Tonight's the night that could well decide the Pacific.
Yeah. And that's a big deal because your best bet of avoiding Vegas, I think, is still winning the Pacific Division. Right, and
you
then,
don't want to. You don't want to have a dream season and face the defending champs.
No, and you don't want to have a dream season and then cough up the division to a team that you were what, like 20 points up on at one point,
25.
18 points up, something like that. There's a lot, right? You don't want to end the season on that note going into the playoffs. You want to take care of business. You want to win your division again, even beyond the seeding implications, right? You don't want the season to end that way. And then I think, as I said, it's your best route to avoiding Vegas. Now, there is still a scenario where you win the division and end up getting Vegas in the first round if they fall off a little bit here. So it's not a guarantee that you dodge them, but I think it helps. It makes it much more likely that you play Nashville or LA in the first round. And then, and I know this is something you've talked about a lot, you win your division, you also make it much more likely that Edmonton and Vegas have to play each other in the first round, which, one, is great for hockey fans, because I think that would be a fantastic series, but that's also great for whichever team might be meeting up with the winner of that series in the second round. If you get two heavyweights like that to go up against each other in the first round. And let's not forget, like, as much as we're all focused on winning the first round right now, this is still a team that pretty clearly has aspirations of going deeper than that. And if you finish second in your division, you might only have home ice for one round, right? And, like, home ice is a big deal. So there's still a lot at stake for winning the division. This is a big game tonight. This is not just Arizona with seven games left in the season. Like, the couple that with what Edmonton with Edmonton playing against Dallas tonight, like, this is a huge, huge rebound spot for the Canucks here.
The main thing, because you can't control what happens in the Dallas game, right?
Whatever. Main thing is get 2 points.
Main thing is you got to beat the Coyotes.
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen? Look, if this team, having been punched in the mouth, can't beat the Coyotes tonight at Mullet Arena, that speaks volumes.
In a game with real stakes for the Canucks, right?
Yeah.
On a number of levels. One, rebounding from your performance, like answering your coach's challenge. Then you look at the division stakes, all of those things. Like, real stakes for the Canucks and no stakes for the Arizona Coyotes, who have, you know, faded after a plucky start to the season. They have massively, massively faded over the latter stages of the season. This is absolutely, and I get people will say, like, whatever, you know, you can't have a statement game in April against the Coyotes. And that's true. It's not like this game will necessarily, you know, you can't hold this up the same way you would hold up a great performance, a contender. But in some ways, as you said, like, a loss would be more damaging in their playoff chances than a win would be helpful, although a win still would be very helpful. Like, if you don't take care of business in this game, when there's so much on the line and so many reasons for you to, I think a lot of these concerns that we're hearing that are starting to bubble up under the surface and spill over in some cases are just going to get way louder. Like, that, I do think, as much as you can say, oh, it doesn't matter, it's just Arizona, if you don't come out and get the job done in this one, like, that is legitimately a major cause for concern.
No question. I mean, this is the test case, right? Like, in some ways, you know, I'm not, like, overall, I'm not overly concerned about Vancouver's form their last handful of games. Like, just the way that I look at it, I think this team has mostly played well. You know, I think they're controlling games decently. I buy the defensive improvements, on and on. But it's going to be hard if they don't bounce back tonight, and if they leave the door wide open to Edmonton. It's going to be hard to come on and be like, see? You know, like, this is one of those pivot points where a team has to. Now, they could lose tonight and the Oilers could get, like, an OT loss, you know, or also lose tonight. And that probably benefits Edmonton, by the way. But the fact is like, you can lose a game and play really well. If the Canucks play really well tomorrow and the play really well tonight and lose, and the Oilers, you know, don't. So, again, whatever. I'm just laying out the shades of gray. There are scenarios where the Canucks lose and I'm not concerned, but they at least need to hit that bar. Like, we at least need to I don't want to be in here again saying what I said about the game last night, which is like the Canucks didn't match their intensity until 5 minutes into the second period.
I don't want to be having the same conversation we were having after the Anaheim game.
Right.
Where it was like, yeah, they got the points, but that wasn't exactly inspiring. It needs to be an inspiring effort, as inspiring as it can be against the Arizona.
Like, yeah.
There needs to be absolutely no doubt about who's the more engaged, hardworking, better team.
Well, and what happened to the professional game?
Yeah.
Remember how much this team talked about, like, yeah, we played a good professional game.
Yep.
And then they come out against Anaheim. We all watched those first two periods. Like, that wasn't up to the standard this team set itself in the fall, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see a professional performance tonight.
I agree with that. And look, as you said, they set that standard and they met it largely
yes.
in the fall, right? They
consistently.
They had those moments where it was a trap game or whatever, you know, last game of a road trip, and they come out and do exactly what they needed to do. They built their reputation on those games, and this is another spot like that. So along those lines, considering, you know, the way they played yesterday in Vegas, how frustrating that was, how important it is to bounce back and get the 2 points tonight. I'm very curious to see what Rick Tocchet does with the lineup, how many changes there are. They have extra forwards available, right? Neil Zaman is here. Phil DiGiuseppe is here. The bottom six has struggled to score mightily. And I guess it's not a surprise when you look at, you know, who was driving the bottom six scoring for so much of the season? It was Connor Garland, and it was Nils Höglander. And now those guys are both playing in the top six. And all of a sudden, you look at the bottom six, and there's nobody who can kind of bring that offensive spark that those guys were bringing earlier in the year. And that's a problem. You know, you can't have half of your forward lineup be kind of a black hole for offense going into the playoffs. Having said that, until Elias Lindholm gets back, I don't know what the real solutions are. But, look, I think it made a lot of sense to get Arshdeep Bains a look at the NHL level. I don't know if they can keep running out with this bottom six configuration, given how little it's generating, how undangerous it's looked.
Well, we talked a bit about it, you know, the idea that, like, this club's depth looks so much different once you get to, you know, those minutes that we were discussing. And, man, could you tell that last night, eh? I thought that was a shape, like, that had a shaping influence on the outcome of the game, in my opinion. And yeah, I mean, the problem is I'm not sure that, like, Phil DiGiuseppe is the answer. Frankly, I'm not sure that, like, Sam Lafferty's the answer, to be totally honest with you. I mean, how many points have we seen him produce over the last?
Mm-hmm. Had a really nice goal. What was it, against Dallas, LA?
LA. Yeah. And
other than that,
I mean, it's been 8 points across. Like, he's on a 20-point-per-82-game pace in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, something we wouldn't write home about. You know, something we definitely wouldn't taunt Maple Leafs fans about. So, but DiGiuseppe, I think, gives you predictability.
Mm-hmm.
I think he gives you the work rate. I think he gives you another answer on the PK. You know, when we were talking about Baines when he came up and made that strong first impression, the comp that I was using was Amadio. Could he maybe be, like, your answer to Amadio? And then you watched that game last night, and Amadio's, like,
no,
legitimately all over the ice.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really high level to even be a non-play-driving middle six winger who can complement, a line that holds its own. Like, that's a really high bar. You can see it when you watch Vegas and see what guys like Paul Cotter and Michael Amadio look like. And those aren't by any means the guys who won the game for Vegas. But you saw moments where it's like Michael Amadio's legitimately mm-hmm. beating Canucks defenders along the wall. Baines just isn't at that level yet. And that's not to say he won't get there. It's just it's not now for him, I don't think. I liked Pod Colson's game, though.
I think Pod Colson has looked like he fits in. Like, you can see the role for him in a bottom six role in a way you can't for Baines yet. That's the important word there. Like, nobody's
totally
burying Baines' future here. It's just this is a team that's looking for solutions to win in the playoffs right now, and I don't think he figures into that.
I think Pod Colson generated maybe their most dangerous 5-on-5 scoring chance all night. Went off the rush there.
Yeah.
That said, at some point, you know, we're in, like, year three of Pod Colson does something that looks great and then results in no goals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, that's been the story of his career, even dating back to Russia. You know, and then And then, just like to bake this narrative in advance, it all flips for him in the playoffs. That's been the story of his career. It's like, can't score in the regular season, becomes
playoff
monster in the playoffs.
Beast.
So, I don't know. I mean, all I'll say is I liked his game last night. I think you're seeing more and more flashes of a guy who probably, given the uniqueness of his profile relative to what Vancouver has up front, that size quotient that he brings, like, on that alone, I think he needs to be in the lineup.
There's no reason to take him out of the lineup.
No.
And if he's playing like this, he can play in the NHL, right? Like, he's clearly an NHL-level player. And then the question is, what's the ceiling? And how much more does he have to give? And how much more does he have to kind of grow into his game, especially offensively? I think that's very much an open question. But I think he's answered the question of, he can be in the NHL every night, you can put him out there for a regular shift, all of those things, right? As a bottom six player. But you look at Pod Colson, and again, it kind of illustrates this, like, let's say Connor Garland was still in the bottom six, right? And, you know, for whatever reason, you split up Connor Garland, Dakota Joshua, and Pod Colson was playing on a line with Connor Garland. I can imagine that line having a lot of success, but Pod Colson is still that player who needs someone to compliment. Like, he's a complimentary player, and I think they have a lot of guys in the bottom six who can be complimentary players. Even Pugh Suter is best positioned as a complimentary player, but not necessarily somebody who's going to create all these offensive chances in his own right. And this is kind of what it looks like when you have either some guys who are overmatched or just a bunch of guys who kind of top out as complimentary bottom six players. There's no straw that stirs the drink there. And then there's just this incredible dearth of scoring from that group.
Yeah, and I don't think Pod Colson, like, this goes back to what I was saying in training camp, right? Where Pod Colson didn't earn a job out of camp and on. I just want to see him play with consistent line mates on the fourth line for 40 games.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still well short of that. You know, the lineup hasn't performed well enough for him to have consistent line mates. So, you know, I'm still a ways away from thinking about Joshua, like a Joshua Pod Colson. How would Pod Colson perform in Joshua's stead? Like, I don't want to know that.
Because
I don't think it would be good. And you know, this dovetails nicely to something I'm sure we'll discuss more when we chat with Rick and company. You know, like, Pod Colson's fought twice since coming over to North America. You know, like, he doesn't have that part of his game. He's never killed penalties. Joshua's a plus penalty killer guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, like, coaches haven't tended to use him at the net front on the power play. Certainly he's not drawing penalties like a Dakota Joshua. He's not impacting the game like a Dakota Joshua. Like, you know, if there was a reasonable case to be made in my mind that Pod Colson could help you sustain a loss of Dakota Joshua, either because you're moving into a different line or, I don't know, because he signs a huge contract elsewhere in free agency, like, that would be great. I don't think we're at that level. I don't even think we should be trying to be at that level, you know? I think Pod Colson's still very much
unreasonable to expect that. And, like, I think it gives short shrift to what Dakota Joshua's done this year and how impactful he's been.
I mean, I'm going to write about this tomorrow anyway, so, and then we'll talk about it more on the crossover. But again, going to my pal and every Canucks fan's favorite analyst, Dom Lucision, I asked him to model out Dakota Joshua's projected value over the next couple seasons. And the aging curve does project that Joshua would provide 3.5 or thereabouts value over the next couple of years. Now, obviously, you go with term. On a 27-year-old that plays a heavy game, it gets a little dicey. But I really think we need to learn to grapple with the idea that a guy making $800K could get that kind of jump, in part because this is what happens when you're a big, competitive third liner on a successful team. Like, it happened to Barkley Gaudreau, happened to Blake Coleman, right? It happened to Marchment in Dallas. Like, Dakota Joshua is not an $800K player anymore. And he's not going to be viewed as that on the open market or on his next deal with the Canucks.
He's not going to be viewed as, like, the guy the Canucks got a buy low option a couple of summers ago, right? Like, he's played himself completely out of that category.
And by the way, this is a credit. Like, it's a problem, obviously. It's something that the Canucks will have to manage. But it's also a credit to how good player development works.
Yeah, and the scouting process to get him in here and the player development process from that point on. That does it for us today. Thanks for bearing with us with the technical difficulties off the top of the show. We'll reschedule the crossover for tomorrow. Canucks play the Coyotes tonight. Enjoy the game. We will be back for tomorrow's show here on Sportsnet 650.